It's in my repertoire. Every single bar is hard. Spitting fire like I'm the human version of Charizard. Welcome to the Trash Ranch. Brent Halliburton, Mike Fouché, Britt Pybus, Caden Hyatt, we're all here. Attendance is 133%. It's incredible. We're all on Twitter. We're not hard to find. You can go find us. You can leave reviews. No one has left a review, even though I've like insulted my audience for several weeks running. I feel like reviews, guys, when you leave reviews, we read them on the pod. It's amazing. And they make a, you know, a little heart-shaped glow in my chest every time I read a review. You guys could be doing that for me. Dragon Shield's a sponsor. They're super cool. And people like Dragon Shield sleeves. Before we jump into all the cups and challenges, and it is crazy how fast we transitioned from a world of let's talk about online results to like cups and challenges.
Yeah.
do we want to talk about Steve Lewis and his son John for a second?
Yeah.
I can try to talk about it, I guess. Like, I guess last week or a week before, Steve Lewis, he's a prominent judge and polka dad in the Houston area. I've had the pleasure of interacting with him several times over the years, none particularly recently, of course, more when I was an active player. And one of his sons, unfortunately, was killed in a car accident after a Taylor Swift concert in, I don't know if it was in Houston or just like in Texas, somewhere else. But yeah, it's just really sad. I think he played at one point in time. I don't think he was like an active player or anything like that, but Steve still is kind of like Will Pose, kind of like one of those, you know, to kind of fairly typical judge or parent involvement where they start involved with their child and kind of just stick around and are a good community member, a useful sort of a judge I would, you know, rely on and things like that. Someone I think I could go to for, you know, keeping up on the metagame and being sound in their rulings and things like that. And it's really unfortunate. I know there's been like GoFundMes and charity tournaments and things like that from others and from the Taylor Swift community as well. I think they sort of rallied behind it as well. No, just him being not just at the concert. I think he was like a Swiftie and pretty involved in the fandom, you know, as a person. And so just in general, it's really sad and just wanted to make sure we sort of brought attention to that, as we always try to do here and there with these when these things happen in our community.
Steve is absolutely fantastic, and obviously, I think everybody's heard the cliche. It's obviously true. No parent should outlive their child. That's rough stuff. Very very unfortunate to hear.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Speaking of very unfortunate, should we talk about cups and challenges?
Wow.
Guys, there's professional podcasting and then there's professional podcasting.
So before we talk about decks and results and whatnot, one thing that I wanted to mention that I think is kind of funny is we've seen, you know, I haven't been paying attention to every single cup, so it's a bit anecdotally, but like seeing like the cups down near Brit, for example, like you guys are getting 50, 60 people at a cup and presumably have to drive quite a distance. And it seems like, you know, amongst like the Midwest and the South, the cup sizes are actually pretty large and people are traveling pretty far for them. And I feel like in the Northeast, it's like the cups are not super small, but people will not drive more than like an hour and a half, 2 hours max often for the vast majority of people to go to a cup. And I think that drives the attendance down a little bit. And I just think that dynamic is quite funny. And it's, you know, just a reflection of culture in these different areas of the country.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I joke about it and me and my habits, that it's just like a Midwest thing. I think just in general, not just for card game travel or anything like that, but I've talked about it before with like concerts and things like that. People have occasionally been like, you know, you travel, you know, 3 hours for a concert, you know, basically the exact same story as describing tournaments in Springfield. Of course, Springfield doesn't get concerts either, and so you'd always have to go to Kansas City or St. Louis for, you know, your big stadium shows and things like that. And similarly, it's just like, yeah, 4 or 5 hours for a concert, yeah, that's just what you do, because we don't, you know, you don't get the shows here, you know, you don't live in Philadelphia, or, you know, a big metro area where that's the case. But yeah, it's just, I think it's in the blood, it's in the water or something. We like to travel. But yeah, it's really strange to see, like, my tournament again this weekend was like 50 plus in Lawrence, Kansas. I was trying to think, other than I'm sure there might have been some in the times that I wasn't like in the area, but we never had tournaments. You know, I've competed in Kansas City for a lot. We've never had tournaments in Lawrence before, not when I was like an active player. And so it's crazy. And even seeing like Tampa, like a cup in Tampa only had like 15 or not 15, but you know, only five rounds still. And that like we in the Midwest and, you know, nowhere Kansas are getting bigger numbers in places like Florida occasionally. It's very strange. I mean, I guess it's just people want to play, but I really feel like, as I think I've sort of expressed before, people have talked about, you know, like, something's got to change in the structure. These record numbers are going to go down. And I just don't think that's true. These players aren't playing just because of like post COVID. I think there's just the game has just grown incredibly. I think the growth is going to stick around. I don't think it's going to pitter out just next year or anything like that, which some people have said it was, and I've disagreed with them each and every time.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think for a bit of perspective on, I don't know if I can say the whole of the West Coast or even the whole of California, but at least Northern California, it feels a little bit different from both the Northeast and the Midwest. It's very much the sort of sense that, like, you know, people don't want to drive too far. They won't travel that far for cups or challenges. But there are just so many people in the area that these cups and challenges still hit really, really large numbers. Even though people aren't traveling insanely far. I know there was a back-to-back set of cups this past weekend in Clovis that some people went to, but Clovis is about the furthest that I've heard people traveling for cups of challenges in, at least in sort of the Bay Area.
How far a drive is that for you?
It's like a 3 or 4 hour, but it's a big one. But then what most people do, because Clovis has a few cups, usually they set them up for these back-to-back weekends, is you actually just travel there and stay overnight. And you just have two cups Saturday, Sunday, as your weekend. You don't do the drive back and forth.
Bring it back, the marathons. I love it.
I miss cities marathons. Those were great.
Yeah, I feel like everyone does. It's definitely something that, like, an old part of the game that I feel like a lot of people would like to see replicated. And I don't know if we ever will. Like, it's just, it's hard in the way that cups work now, that you'd have to, like, that they just always happen. It's difficult, but like you could make it work if you really wanted to, I'm sure. But
yeah, I mean, it would require a lot of organizing on the part of the game stores, and that feels a little hard. But yeah, my favorite thing about the old cities marathons was you would end up getting these like almost mini meta games within the week and weekend, where like you would know who's going there. So it's, you end up getting this like mini meta of like, you know, maybe like less than 100 people, and just what are these people gonna play for the next tournament, and trying to figure that out, which is very different than like trying to guess at the larger metagame of regionals or an internats. So
it's fascinating because, yeah, you say these are the 50 people that are going to be at the tournament, and this is the deck list that these 50 people played yesterday.
Yeah. Right?
Like, yeah, a lot of opportunity for gamesmanship there, right? You know, one thing that I recognize is interesting is, like, just to your point, Mike, about how people are not willing to travel that far. I'm interested in your take. Like, I think two things that are like kind of externalities is there's just like the perception of how far to travel is reasonable, and I recognize that's different from place to place. The example I always heard people talk about in life is like Albany and Syracuse are like an hour drive apart, and nobody in Syracuse would ever think like they would commute to Albany for work. Like, they're like, that's an insane thing to do. But
yeah,
people commute from King of Prussia to downtown Philadelphia an hour every day, like every day. Like, you're just like, yeah, that's a thing you do. Mm-hmm. And they just accept that, and it's totally fine. Like, I wonder if on the East Coast, I don't know if people are spoiled or if there's more tournaments. Like, there's just so many tournaments that are coming that, like, they feel more chill about it.
Yeah. I think that has to be a big part of the thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing I wondered is, like, how much people are deterred. Like, but I would assume it's the same in the Midwest and California. Like, Are there a lot of people that you think don't go to California tournaments, Caden? Because they're like, I'm going to go and Finn's going to be there and Kian's going to be there. And like it isn't like I'm going to get any points at that tournament.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think for, I don't know what the sort of mentality is around other folks, but like, we don't have that many cups or challenge. We don't, we really, a lot of our game stores, especially in the Bay, in the like immediate Bay Area, went out of business during COVID. Because, you know, because COVID and because, the like price of renting out a store space in the Bay is so expensive. Like a lot of those places went out of business, which means we really don't have that many cups or challenges. So you can't afford to like wait around to try and hope some of the top players like max out cups or challenges and stop going. So I don't think many players can afford to have that mentality of like, oh, there are going to be top players there, so I might as well just not go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think here it's like people just, they're not going to travel more than like an hour or so if they don't think that they have like a really good shot at, you know, getting their invite or winning or whatnot, but they're not. But if it's like less than an hour, I don't think they think about that at all. Top player thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like the question is how far do you have to track? Like, you know, how far do you travel and then say like, man, that wasn't worth it at all. Why did I do that? Like people kind of do that math in their head and say, what are the odds that I'm going to look back and say, why did I do that? That was insane.
Yeah. 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 And I guess that variable of distance is just different for different parts of the country.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Shall we talk about how this past weekend was for us? Or do we want to talk about the meta a little first before we talk about how our tournaments went? I feel like Britt was saying before the pod, he's got a couple of barn burners ready for us.
Yeah. Britt, start us off.
I don't have anything too particular on metagame developments or anything like that. I will say just, you know, a basic fact, I guess, just like sort of as we already said, talking about the city marathons, like your local metagame is, you know, kind of depends a lot more than us talking about the general metagame. So like what is or isn't good plays like really can depend on things like that. Just like, you know, for example, at my one on Sunday, there was a lot of like probably Guardi to me seemed like the most played deck, which definitely wasn't the case the week before. There was more Lost Zone the week before, and a lot of players, like several players, have switched to Guardi from the decks that they were on in week one. And you know, one of these guys like made day two at EUIC, like played Lugia there, played Lugia in Springfield, and has switched off Lugia into Guardi. So yeah, I mean, I just talking about that and like that, those things happen. You kind of, as a player, you need to be paying attention to those things, like not to necessarily, it's like wrong still to try to counter like a singular player or anything like that. But you just like have to know like, oh, you know, maybe this deck is, you know, this 1%, 2%, you know, worse, you know, because of X, Y, and Z, depending on how others develop. But yeah, I guess just as a general sort of thought, it's like, I really think that it seems very open to me insofar as like what can succeed at locals. I actually haven't looked at PokéStats or anything like that to see like what the stats are saying in terms of like what top performers are and if a lot of people are like reporting results. I remember like back in the day, like the Charizard Lounge was always the best place that really sort of tried to keep track of local events. But yeah, I haven't looked at PokéStats, so I don't have any idea of how things have been trending. But I would think that just in general, since EUIC, that like sentiment is, you know, Gardevoir is good. Not only is Gardevoir good, but I think we just all sort of like overrated the Lost Box matchup. Like, and of course the Mirage Gate matchup is tough, but like I think it's fine. I think, and I think even, and this is something I guess I can talk about in my own personal experience, the Charizard matchup, I played Charizard both weeks, and the Guardi matchup stinks. I think it's so hard. Like you can win it, but it's like your back is against the wall like the entire game. It feels like unless they stutter or something like that. If they bench stuff and stuff, like it's very, very hard. Yeah, so I guess to say more on that, I played Charizard and like just kind of decided this week. Well, I did almost play Palkia. I mentioned that last week. I like chewed on a lot of different Palkia ideas and like I wish I had played it, all things considered. There wasn't that much Mirage Gate yesterday. Andrew Hendrick showed up to my cup and I saw him playing it. And so that was like, okay, I just won't play Palkia then. But probably wouldn't have mattered all that much at the end of the day. I think there was one other in top eight, but I really didn't see all that many just throughout the room. It was really a lot of Lugia. Yeah, so I wanted to try a couple other different things. I just kind of played like two cards off of Pedro's list and I stuck without switchers again. And like one thing we'd sort of talked a lot about in our group chat is that, and this plays very particularly into the Gardevoir matchup, is I don't, compared to Mirage Gate, the Charizard deck just like doesn't have like a mid game option, you know, for lack of a better way to express it. In that you have Cramorant early, obviously, and then you raise to Sableye, but you don't have anything sort of in that third to fourth turn. Like unless you just get really, really lucky, which I don't, I didn't. And I think there's speed to which I'm missing lines on how to play faster, I'm sure. So I definitely some of this is in my own play. But yeah, so anyways, like you get a really good start with Cramorant, and then like the Mirage Gate then gets to seven. So they have this middle option once they hit seven where they don't need Sableye, but they have Raikou or, you know, manually attacking with Drapion is obviously huge in the Guardian matchup, as well as Dragonite. And so lacking that option, I found that just like, you just can't do anything. You know, like Cramorant is really diminishing returns when you only have like the two boss effects. So like, again, maybe just more particularly in the Gardevoir matchup where you have to be cognizant of like Ralts evolving and then also dealing with like Zacians and things like that, because they'll just take six prizes on you if you try to go around it too often. So I wanted to play something, and just like Entei EX is like the only thing I could really find that kind of I think like fills the space in a way that like you don't really have to do anything to change the deck to put it in. So I played, like, I'm trying to think of all the differences. I kind of combined Pedro's list, my list from the week before, and like Tate, he made top four to cup with basically Pedro's list with just like a couple other differences. And I sort of just like mashed those all together and ended up playing like, I played the Entei, I played a Penny, and I think that was it. I just didn't play the Mawile or Miltank, basically. And I think I cut a Pokégear and that was it. And I did play a Basin this week. I played three Beach the week before and I played one Basin since it had, you know, but obviously has better synergy with the Entei. But actually, interestingly enough, another part that I think makes Entei really good is the 230 HP. That's just like a pretty good number. So in a lot of scenarios, a lot of use cases, you just want to manually attach to it. So the Basin isn't even all that much of a concern for it. I also went with 3-3 on energy and it felt fine. I never felt punished for it, just wanting to have the extra fire energy for Entei, of course. And yeah, pretty another kind of lackluster performance, unfortunately. I don't feel like, again, I do think I'm missing some lines, but and they're not intelligible to me still. So I don't have any like specific examples where I did X and should have done Y and it changed the game. But I'm sure just like based on how well Pedro always does with the deck, that there's nuances that I'm still missing. But yeah, so for my report then, I played a new player round one. She was playing Giratina Lost Box. She actually played really, really, really well. It was her first tournament. And I was very impressed with how well she played. We played two. I won both games, but they were both like pretty close, pretty even. The first game, like they didn't quite get started and I eventually just kind of overrun them. But the second game was like neck and neck the entire time. It was very good. And then, so I won 2-0 there. And then I played did I play Guardian X? I played two Guardian in a row. Yeah. So I only played four rounds. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. What else did I play against? I played against a Gardy where I won a really, really long game one and I just like drew past game two and they benched me pretty quickly. And then we tied game three and I like in a 6-6, like 6-6 prizes, but it was my best start of the series to their best start of the series. And like I started doing it after the first paying attention of just like, did the winner of the game play VIP, like compared to the loser of the game? And almost every game I played was just like the person who played more VIPs on the first turn ended up winning the game by like pretty easy margins. And then the next round I also played against Guardi, and I had another really, really, really long game one, where I got blown up by a penny that I just didn't see coming. I thought I had him checkmated for a really long time. And then he was digging for something. And I thought his only option was to, cause he pal pads a Roxanne in, and it's like, you know, has no cards in deck and is digging that. His only win con, hitting him to hit the Roxanne and then to me not have boss on the next turn to chase down a Lumineon with Charizard. And he played a penny, and there wasn't anything I really could have done about it, but I just immediately won the game and was like a 40 minute game. And so I just gave him the series. I didn't even like set up after that. And then I get to play against, Quad Klefki, Maraidon, Regieleki, Magnezone.
Liam was telling me that you were complaining about this.
Oh man, it's like a deck that like only beats Lost Box sometimes. It's like it's exactly like Empoleon, I feel like, where it's just like not even good because the Lost Box decks are, you know, so constructed with escape rope and things like that.
And he had me a quad deck Klefki.
Yeah. And both games he like got double Klefki on his first turn too. And so in the first game I lost very quickly, and in the second game I actually like was doing really, really well, and part of it was because of the Entei. There was actually a game there in the Gardevoir that I lost to the round before. I don't know if it was a misplay because I lost zoned it pretty early. But there was a scenario where after the penny, if I could have made an Entei, I might have been okay, because he doesn't have anything at that point that can one shot the Entei, because like the Gardevoir EX only does 190. So I could have taken a hit with it and then like potentially cleaned up a Sableye or something like that, but I had lost on it. So it was kind of my only out after the penny, and wasn't an option. But it could have potentially been good. So like, I feel pretty okay about the card in general in the deck. I feel like the deck does have this like mid game problem, and like specifically in the Gardevoir matchup where your damage just gets really bad really fast. If they evolve, like your Charizard, it doesn't do enough. And like, if they're really careful on how they put damage on, like 310 is so much HP. Like 310 is so much HP when they have like Cresselia and stuff like that to deal with your damage. And so like between Cresselia and Penny and not having the mid game options, I'm just like pretty confident that it's just a lousy matchup. And like, as I've expressed my metagame developing, I don't think I could play Charizard at any other ones. I just don't think this matchup is good. I'm ready to pack in the deck now, I think. Depending on where the format goes, I suppose. I like the good thing about the Lost Zone decks is like they're probably always going to be good. Until they cycle, I would think. Like they're just so strong. The package is just so strong, and the way that the single prizers interact with what you pair it with, whether that's two prizers or whether it's other single prizes, is just like the prize game plan is always so strong. Maybe I'm missing something. I'd be curious to hear, and like maybe I just need to play Mawile again or something like that and try to deck them out. But as it is, if they set up, it just feels abysmal. Like you just damage isn't good. Your damage isn't good enough, and they have healing and early Zacian. Like they're taking prizes on you early too.
So what are you thinking about for this coming weekend?
I think I said this last week, and I said it to like my friends during the weekend. Like I would play Guardi if I had the cards for it. I think it feels. I think it's the best deck if it. Like the Mirage Gate matchup is obviously like very close, and like my friend Colton, he's the best player from Springfield. He made day two at EUIC. He beat Andrew Hendrick in Swiss with Guardi, and Andrew was playing Mirage Gate. Andrew won the Saturday tournament that I wasn't at, and then I think he also lost in top eight there, I think. But other than that, I'm not sure. I've been talking with Ross, is probably the person I've chat with the most at these cups that I've been at, and he's on Gudra, and I talked to him a little bit, just like, so why Gudra? Tell me, you know, what's your logic there? And a lot of it was just, I think, classic rock. Ross deck choice is that it's just the deck that he's been playing the most. And that, you know, he just in his busyness and his college professor now, he doesn't have as much time to test everything. It seems like he always kind of locks down one deck kind of for the whole year. Like with Malamar and Blacephalon and things like that. But he did okay with Gudra. He made top four, I think, the day before at the Saturday one. He did about the same in Springfield, I think. Gudra is a deck that, similar to Charizard, I guess, in theory, where you're okay, you're like solid into almost every matchup. I mean, I think here that the Guardian matchup is as bad, if maybe worse, potentially. I'm not sure. Ross says it's, I was asking him about that specifically because my impression was, you know, or at least looking at the EUIC results, like Gudra does really well to a certain point. And my thought was just that Gardevoir started beating it in day two and things like that. And he says that, you know, I don't think it's a great matchup, but if you get a quick enough start, I think it can be fine in the way you can deal with it, depending on the seal stone, I suppose. But yeah, I don't know what else would really be. I don't have any good reason not to play Mirage Gate, I guess, other than the kind of difficulties I've expressed with just dealing with Mirage Gate as a card. It just, I feel like that's why I wanted to play the Charizard version, and just kind of opting out of dealing with that really gravitated me towards the Charizard build. But now that I've sort of hit this wall in matchups, I'm kind of just back to the drawing board, or just think you got to bite the bullet and hope to sequence correctly, sequence in the right order and so on.
I feel like that's a good transition because you kind of left off talking about Gudra, and Gudra is what I played to my cup this weekend. And I decided to play Gudra for a couple of reasons. One, as you said, Ross has been playing it, and I talked with Ross a bunch. He likes the deck. I played it a bunch this past week. We ended up playing a bit different of lists, but you know, same concept. I personally think the Guardi matchup is close, probably slightly unfavored, but it's not that bad. If you just like with like the Mirage Gate Turbo version, you can get a quick Greninja, and if they are not really expecting it because they're like, oh, you're Gudra, you're slow, they don't prioritize Manaphy or something like that, you can just kind of win the game on the spot, basically there. Having Choice Belt is quite good in the matchup because sometimes you can chase down Zacian if they're, you know, trying to get that out early in order to, you know, just have that play later. So I think like, you can do some weird stuff if they go for Zacian Sky Seal Stone to not win the game. Sometimes you can just boss up a Greninja and win because they've been too careless with their energy. So they have to be like really careful about a lot of different things. I think if Guardi gets, if both decks have an equal start, Guardi is favored for sure. But I think Gudra has a lot of play in the matchup. But I'll come back to that in a little bit. So I ended up playing Gudra. I was deciding between Gudra, Mirage Gate, Lost Box, which I played in the challenge last week, and I had Guardi as well. But when I got to the cup, I don't know. I was just like looking around at what people were playing, and there was a bunch of, it seemed like there was going to be a bunch of Lost Box, Mirage Gate Lost Box. And I think Gudra is pretty strong into the Mirage Gate Lost Box. It's not as good into the Charizard Lost Box, but yeah, it's really good into Greninja Mirage Gate. It's pretty good into Mew because I played double Drapion and I saw some Mew. So it seemed like a solid play. My main competition there was, I mean, there's a lot of good players, but like the main competition at this cup was Justin Bokhari. And I just kind of figured he would play Lost Box because that's what he played at EUIC. And he ended up playing Lugia. But I talked to him, he was like literally deciding at the last minute between Lugia and Lost Box. So I was like kind of close. Lugia is not a great matchup for Gudra unless Gudra techs specifically for it. I didn't end up playing Justin. But so our cup was kind of like medium size. We had 32 masters, which is one short of 6 rounds top 8. So we had 5 rounds top 8. And I beat a Lost Box round 1. I lost to, I don't know if you guys saw the list of, it's like a crazy Gardevoir water fire deck. Have you guys seen this?
I have not seen this.
So it like uses Kirlia and Shining Arcana Gardevoir. It runs like one or two Articunos, one Kyogre, one Crabominable V, one Delphox V. And that's like the whole deck.
Okay.
Like Gardevoir pile. And in theory, like Gudra is super favored into that because like, what are they? They can Crabominable, but okay. But I just didn't play a supporter. So I lost that game. So I'm 1-1. And then I drove up to this cup with one other guy and I play him round three. he's playing Mew and I got him with double Drapion. So I'm 2-1. Then I play against Kyogre Lost Box, basically Nick Moffitt's list. And I beat that. So I'm 3-1. And so 3-1, going into the last round, we could ID. And a couple 3-1-1s will miss if everybody IDs. And I'm playing against Gardevoir. I know I'm playing against Gardevoir in the last round. So, and like I said, I think the matchup is close, slightly unfavored. So I just took the ID because I think that seemed a little bit safer. And I squeak into top eight as the eighth seed. So I was pretty happy about that. And then I end up playing against Ryan Antonucci in top eight with the Lawson Charizard. And that matchup is definitely unfavored for Gudra. It's close, but unfavored for sure, because the game kind of comes down to towards the end. They'll like Sableye for a bunch of prizes. They have Horn to like pretty much ensure that they don't have to go through two Gudras. And then they can like rope boss at the end of the game to just do 250. So ended up losing in top eight. Ryan ended up winning the cup. He beat Justin in the finals of our cup. So it was a pretty stacked cup, to be honest. Like out of 32, there was Justin and Ryan are like, it's actually kind of funny. Justin and Ryan are like 16, 17, 18. So they're like really, like the finals of that cup was them too. And they're like fighting, like the 10 points really matters, I think, between them. And so like they were there. Vaughn O'Brien was there. I was there. There's a couple other like people that already had their invite. So even though it was only 32 players, it was like a pretty high percent of good players. So yeah, that was my cup experience. Glad to get some points. And I don't have any local tournaments for, I'm not doing anything more until Hartford because I got some real life stuff to do the next couple weekends.
You know, yeah, Abingdon's just down the road, man.
Yeah, I've got a wedding next week.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess you jump to mind. I don't have anywhere near as nice of a transition. I was at a wedding this past weekend, so I wasn't able to go to any tournaments this last weekend. But the weekend prior, I was able to go to one challenge out in SF. And it was a little weird. It was a best of three challenge. We had five rounds. It was five rounds best of three. So it was a pretty long day, I'm going to be honest. I ended up playing Mew because I thought there was going to be a lot of Guardi, and I felt pretty confident about the Guardi matchup as Mew. It felt like probably the best deck to try to beat Guardi, besides playing Guardi itself, but that's kind of iffy. So I ended up going with Mew, very close to Pablo's list. I ran the four path. The only change I made was one that Pablo actually mentioned he wanted to make after the tournament, which was cutting the Fan of Waves for an Oricorio. So that was the one change I made. Oricorio didn't end up being very useful. I mean, you'll see why when I get into my actual matchups. Okay, it mattered a little bit, but for the first round. But so I went in expecting to hit a lot of Guardi, and there were actually quite a few Guardi. I think there were, it was, I think we had like one, we probably had like 22 players, something like that. And we had like 22 players, and there were probably like seven, eight Guardi. So a good amount of Guardi. I managed to hit none of them, which was really unfortunate. I hit The biggest matchup I didn't want to hit going into the tournament was, of course, Lost Box of pretty much any variant. I wasn't looking forward to that. I hit three of my five rounds were against Lost Box. I managed to go 4-1. I got second at the cup. I was the only 4-1 in the whole cup. And as I'll go through, briefly mention some of the good players that were there, and then I'll talk about my actual rounds. But we had, I feel like, two notable ones. Nathaniel Kaplan, who I don't know if any of you know, but he was gunning for his invite at this challenge. He needed top four or better for his invite, which he managed to get. He ID'd his last round for top four. He was running Lugia, and then also Alex McNeil, who got top eight at San Diego Regionals. Was also there, and he was running Guardi. So I, in part, chose Mew with the mentality that, you know, I want to make sure I have favorable matchups against those folks to see if I, to give myself the best odds of winning. As for what I hit, round one, I hit Garatina Lost Zone, which I think is probably the best matchup for Mew out of the variants of Lost Box, which just because. When they can't, they have to play Tina, and they have to play Tina down. And when they are not consistent enough without Tina, and when they're playing Tina down, you're able to kind of win the game too fast for them. So it went all three games. I won the first round largely because he started Garatina and wasn't able to get it out of the active spot. So I got a very quick, easy two prizes, and then was able to just clean up. Game two went exactly how he wanted it to go. I prized my Oricoria, which sucked. And so he was able to get a KO with Tina and then use Tina's V-Star to get a second KO on a VMAX. And so I lost. And then game three went sort of how I feel like the matchup is going to go most of the time, where we're kind of dead even. And then I gust KO a Tina, maybe Gus KO another Tina. I do, of course, have the Echoing Horn, and am able to kind of just outpace him. So I won game three. Round two, I hit Lawson Box Greninja, which is a close matchup. That is, I do not enjoy playing that match. It's not fun, especially I do not run any Lost City, which makes Drapion a very scary threat. I kind of just have to throw down a path, judge them, cross my fingers, hope they don't hit the pieces they need to bounce the path and get Drapion out. And that managed to work against this Lost Zone. I won both games pretty handedly, even through both games. He managed to get, of course, one KO with Drapion, but was never able to get the second. So I won both of those games. Then I hit a Mirage Zamazenta Lost Zone Box. I don't think he was playing a single V in his whole deck. And this matchup sucks. I think it might be Mew's worst matchup. He wasn't running any Drapion, but just the ability for Zamazenta and to trade so well against Mew and Gust KOing like a Genesect or something makes this matchup unbelievably oppressive as the Mew player. So I lost twice versus that. I lost both games, wasn't able to pull it out. And that matchup feels quite bad. Then I hit Alex Szymanski's deck, the Duraludon with the Vulpix. He ran, and of course, the two Drapion, which I was very scared of. Naturally, it has two Drapion. I just have to play path and hope they don't attack with the two Drapion. And as it turns out, the deck's pretty inconsistent. Especially in terms of trying to find stadium outs. So I was on multiple game two, he actually benched the Drapion early and I was able to gust kill it. But neither game he was able to attack with both Drapion. So I was able to win because Mew is able to take prizes very quickly against a deck like that. Four path means that Duraludon isn't really a threat. You can kill it pretty quickly. But most of the game was honestly just gusting around the Dura. And the other thing to keep in mind, of course, is throwing down path early is so useful to try to prevent like a Starbirth or something. I found that I play path very, very proactively with Mew. I kind of just throw it down almost every turn, even sometimes when I don't have an out to bounce at the next turn, because with most of these decks in this format, they kind of have to bounce path in order to continue playing the game. And if they don't bounce path, like, okay, maybe I'll wait a turn, or I'll just retreat into another Mew if I've already had it set up and just swing. So I play path very, very proactively, and it's worked out pretty well. My final round, I went against Mew Mirror, which I hate this mirror. This mirror is just kind of miserable. The big turning point, I would say, I ran the Avery. He also had Avery, but my Avery was much more useful than his Avery in game two. Game one, I went first and was just able to kind of blow him out. But game two, I was able to Avery him and then Gust kill a Genesect and kind of just knock out his engine. And he wasn't really able to get going past that. So finished 4-1, got second, got myself 12 points. I think Mew is a very good pick. I mean, I'll talk a bit more about this when we talk about Portland this weekend and what I'm thinking there. But I think Mew is a very strong pick. Probably the best deck if you want to just try to beat Guardi and focus on beating Guardi. But I think it definitely has some iffy matchups, again, especially against some of the Lost Zone variants. Yeah.
So Liam went to two challenges. You guys may have already heard the story. He played his homegrown control list, and he went 1-3 and 2-2. And I was like, well, yeah, hopefully you got everything you learned. But, like, he could sign up to be an NFL cornerback, because he woke up the next day and said, I forgot why I lost. You know, I think the deck's probably okay. and like an hour and a half ago, I saw him tweeting. He's like, who wants to test? Be prepared for some long games. And I'm like, oh, okay. Apparently it'd be like that. But so you talk about the 12 points, Caden, made me feel like I should ask. Do you guys feel like, do we know more about where the meta is? Watching these like challenge and cup results come in versus these like large online tournaments that historically we've kind of looked at. And now it's been a little bit weird because not only are there suddenly these like tournaments that award points and are meaningful, you get 12 points for coming in second. And like, that's meaningful for, you know, Nathaniel Kaplan, he needs the points to get his invite. And also like the PTCG Live thing has kind of made some of the online tournaments a little weird lately. Like, is this a better indicator of where the meta is going because people need points and they're bringing like the real deck? I know Liam always used to say, you don't play the spice at an online tournament because who cares? Like, you got to save the spice for a meaningful tournament and play cookie cutter lists at online tournaments because why would you give away the good stuff in some random online tournament worth nothing?
Yeah, I mean, my feelings on this are, I think online tournaments are going to definitely decrease in popularity, probably a good amount with the return of cups and challenges, and of course PTCG Live being bad. But I think that cups are no better really in representation of the meta than online tournaments were. Arguably a worse representation of the meta because they're kind of just a snapshot of one area of like a local scene. I think that the one thing they're better for is trying to get a sense of what some of the top players are testing and thinking about, because a lot of those players either didn't play in online tournaments, or as you mentioned, like wouldn't bring the stuff they're actually testing to online tournaments. And I think it's a little different with cups with CP on the line. I think it's useful to see, and I think you will get some valuable insight into what some of these top players are actually testing, considering by looking at cup and challenge results. But I don't think that they're any worse or much better than like about getting like a sense of the larger metagame.
See, I disagree a little bit. I think they are useful. I think at least, you know, that they can be useful in assessing the larger metagame just in the sense of popularity. Like, you know, as you say, like, I think if you were to look at the results at Pokestats, like, I think we would trends would be reflected. Trends that I have hundreds about, and that would be to say, like, I think more people are playing Gardevoir. Alex Szymanski's deck is basically non-existent. Things like that, I think, are very useful. I think the data would back up those up and sort of establish them as trends going into Portland. Not a whole lot beyond that. Obviously the like particular player choice is like good to know, but not terribly helpful at the end of the day, unfortunately. But I think you can assess just at least the general popularity contest, like in just how things are shaking up, like not even necessarily in like winning, but like just top eights in general. Like, I just don't think people are playing Alex's deck, and that's a useful point of data to know going in and going into Portland. Obviously you can make two kinds of predictions with it. You know, people are going to capitalize on that fact and play it again, or, you know, maybe it doesn't need to be on your radar. I think they can be a little more useful now, because I guess we've talked about this before, just in the way that the game has changed as well. And that local events are, you know, reflective of local metagames. That's true. But then at the same time, regionals aren't local anymore. You know, in the past, it was your Midwest regional, and that's the one that everyone in the Midwest too. So, you know, you pay attention to that data for a reason. But here, you know, again, because everyone just goes to everything, that's why I think the local data is useful for just the general, you know, the general popularity and things like that, because the game has just grown so much to the point where people are traveling all over, you know, are going to be at Hartford from much more than just the East Coast. Whereas, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, only East Coast would have been at Hartford.
Yeah. Well, and I think at least right now, the online metagame shifts are pretty similar from what I feel like I've been seeing, from challenge and cup results just on Twitter and whatnot. Some of the big things, like Britt, as you mentioned, like the Arceus deck, Arceus Duraludon stuff is not super popular. And you would think that in best of one, it would be even better than in best of three, because it's like a pretty consistent deck and whatnot. So people are choosing not to play that. And kind of the other big one is Lugia has fallen off quite a bit. From EUIC. And we talked a little bit about that last week. It's just kind of in a weird spot. You are kind of like forced to play like Duraludon or whatnot. But I'm not sure how much that changes going into a regional, because Lugia is a much better best of three deck than it is a best of one deck. So I don't know how much that'll impact people's choices. I am confident Lugia will be less popular, but I don't know if it'll be as non-existent as it seems to be right now at Portland.
Yeah. Speaking of Portland, should we talk
about Portland?
I mean, so I'm the only person on the pod here who's going to Portland. But I think that I am curious about your guys' thoughts on the tournament and what might be a good play. Right now I am between Guardi and Mew. I think Guardi's the best deck in the format, and I think Mew is the deck that beats Guardi the most consistently. So that's sort of why I'm between those two. I think Towards List is definitely the right direction to take Guardi. I've been testing it some, and there are only a few changes I would make to the list, I think. But I think largely Towards List is really capitalizing on what makes Guardi so strong and oppressive in so many matchups. Similarly with Mew, I think that there's a little bit more wiggle room in terms of what list you're running. Because of course with Pablo's list, there were several like interesting decisions, most notably not running any Lost City, that I think there's an argument to be made for changing. But I also think Pablo's list is just very, very strong and very consistent. So I'm between those two. I'm not sure which way I'll end up going, but yeah.
Yeah. Guardi. So like, I generally agree. I think Towards Guardi list is extremely good. And one of the things that I find really interesting about it is that you can't really change that much, because there's so many like little synergies in the deck that if you change one of them, then you're kind of, you kind of want to change another one. So for example, the fact that he runs two Zacian and Lumineon complements the inclusion of Collapse Stadium and Penny by a lot. So like if you drop Penny, then the second Zacian gets a lot worse, I think. And Lumineon gets a bit worse. I think Collapse is like probably just staying no matter what. So that, you know, doesn't matter. But like there's a lot of like little synergies in there that make it hard to change too much in the list. The only like really easy change that I can suggest is like minus research plus Serena. Like I feel like that's fine. But other than that, I'm really not too sure. Like my list that I'm running is more similar to what I was running at UIC, but it's like several cards different because I feel like it has to be to flow together as a deck comparatively to Torts. But yeah, I kind of agree just generally with your analysis. Like I think Gardy is the best deck. I think Mew has a decent Gardy matchup. I think Greninja Lost Box is probably better against Gardy than Mew is, but I don't know if I would want to play that in a regional.
No, yeah, I feel similarly.
Mew is really strong. Just in, as I've said, Gardy is like my top choice. Like I don't have any real salient arguments not to play Mew. It's always in a good spot. You just play Judge. You know, you play this Judge game in most of your, in so many of your matchups, and you just kind of cross your fingers and pray. But I think more generally that, you know, maybe as our segue into the VIP problem, I find that not, you know, outside of that, a lot of the matchups I feel like are just this, and I, you know, I guess this is true consistently across the history of the game, that, you know, we can complain about this kind of variance all we want, but again, like just N for better or worse is just a, you know, evergreen card. And so these, you know, these checks where it's just like, well, you know, I just have to beat the one hand, you know, reset the hand disruption supporter once. And like, that's what I feel like happened. And like all of my, basically every game I played on Sunday, like on top of, you know, VIP compounding just inconsistencies, that just almost every, like the Guardy that I beat, I got judged and I saw Colorus off the judge and I beat him. The Guardy that I didn't beat, judged me into like two energy, you know, in a turn where I like, if I had had the boss, I could have like also just won on the spot in this game where the penny beat me. So like there's lots of like little things going on and like that played a role. And even in, I don't think I finished whining about my my Klefki games. I like would have won game two. Like I was doing really, really well in game two and just like a mid game judge just clunked me and I passed for the rest of the game. And I just like was in a really good spot. Like I was up like three prizes and I had to hit Entei into a VMAX and like I was in a really good spot. Like all I needed was like one more Colorus and like I think I would have been. But just, yeah, it just feels so generally that so many matchups are just judge checking you over and over again. Like that's what the Arceus Giratina does. Like, and it just like feels bad. I don't know. There's just so little you can do against it. Like even playing to your outs, even, you know, optimizing your deck to the best of your ability, it's just like, just going to be variance at the end of the day. And when you factor that into the battle VIP issue, which I'll let Mikey say more on, it's just, for me, I'm giving this format a big thumbs down. I don't think it's very good.
My issue with battle VIP pass is that you're kind of forced to play them in almost every deck. And because like, if your opponent starts with one and you just start with like, even a nest ball, like that's 50% worse on turn one. And so you're immediately behind by a lot. And so you're like, all of these decks are just forced to play it and it kind of sucks. And like, you see all the best decks, like the best decks are like Lost Box, Mew, Gardevoir, basically. And they all play battle VIP pass, but they all have a way to leverage the dead card as the game goes on. And not every deck has the ability to do that. So those other decks can't really play VIP pass as successfully because they either can't find it as consistently as Mew or Guardy or Lost Box, and they just can't leverage like getting rid of the dead card as the game goes on. And so therefore they're just strictly worse, like almost certainly worse than all of these other decks, almost inherently. And that just kind of feels bad. Like, I think, for example, that like Inteleon Urshifu is actually a really interesting deck if Lugia is kind of down a little bit, because Lugia is kind of its worst matchup. In theory, it's, you know, it's got good matchups against Lost Box. It can beat Gardevoir potentially by kind of killing their stuff. But like, you can't run four VIP pass in that deck. I mean, I guess you could, but like, you're just gonna like kind of clunk your deck in an already somewhat clunky deck. And therefore, it's like, if you run four VIP pass, like, you're using so many spots where you need other stuff, and you're kind of clunking yourself up, especially if you don't hit one turn one. But then if you don't run it, you're behind. And so like, you kind of like split the difference and you're on Irida as in one VIP pass. So it just kind of like, I don't know. It just feels so bad when your opponent plays a VIP pass turn one and you don't. Like, you're just immediately at a huge disadvantage.
You just can't win so often.
Yeah, yeah. You literally can't win games often because of that.
And like, that's, I think sort of
so bad to lose on turn one.
And like, I think just sort of naturally we've reached a good point. And this is, I think, just why I think Mew and Guardi are the best decks. It's because, just to add on how Mikey, you know, talks about how they deal with VIPs, they're better at dealing with the VIP than the Lost Box decks. It's, you know, you kind of have to get lucky with VIP passes in Lost Box to get rid of them. It's, they just have to be in your choruses, and you know that's basically it. You don't have there's no quick ball or anything. There's no ultra ball or anything. There aren't other real ways to get rid of them. Whereas you know, I think Gardevoir is the best deck, and you know, Krillia just being the answer to getting rid of them is obviously so strong. And Mew has at least, you know, Cramomatic and Ultra Ball and things like that. But yeah, I think that's just why. Another just compounding reason why I think they're ever so slightly better decks, or you know, maybe just safer at the end of the day. Because like Mirage Gate, when you hit the nuts, like, is probably, I think, is the best deck on paper. I think it like should win every matchup, you know, in a nut draw, I think. For the most part, obviously, like, as it has some bad matchups, but like, yeah, for the most part, at least, maybe it doesn't win every matchup, but just like the power level, if we were to quantify that in some way, I think it would have, you know, the strongest sort of, you know, oomph in perfect draws. But you don't always get the perfect draw. Sometimes you like triple Comfy, Colorus, and like, I mean, I guess you have triple Comfy, you're probably all right. But sometimes you like play a Colorus, you do a flower selecting, and it's just dud. And like, all you needed was like the one VIP, and you watch your opponent do two. Or like, that was the part of the frustration of playing against Gardevoir, is like, I kept going second because I wanted them not to be able to like play a supporter to see more VIP passes and stuff like that. And I would just like watch them like raw play two, and I would play zero, and I'd be like, next game, and like things like that. It's just, it feels bad that the matchups can just feel over. Matchups can feel just like checkmated just based on that opening. And I just like, I think as like a design issue, to me, this is just like a problem that could be very easily solved if Pokemon did like core sets. And you know, like, they're close to doing that with, you know, more and more cards becoming, you know, evergreen cards, but like, that we don't have like a quick ball sort of option like always at our disposal. We'll always just end up in these awkward scenarios where, you know, we've talked about the dual ball formats before, which was terrible, where like, you, everyone played dual ball, and sometimes you would get quad tails on them and just lose and things like that. But it was just faster. It was the tempo you needed to play. It was faster than Pokemon Collector and Roseanne's Research and so on. And that, I just feel like if they wanted their game not to feel like this, they could. It's a very solvable problem. And like, I don't know why we couldn't just have better options.
I know why. We've talked before about like, yeah, my problem obviously has always been, I mean, they give you a high roll card. The format instantly centralizes on it because you can't lose to the other guy that happens to high roll. Right. Like there's no choosing consistency as an option. If the other guy's got a card that 50-50 wins in the game, and you're like, you just feel pressure to play that too.
I mean, it's. I think maybe where what I was trying to say with like N being, you know, the hand disruption being just a core part of the game, especially compared to other ones. It's just compounded when like that's fine. Let's bite the bullet on that. N's going to beat you. Even getting N to six is going to beat you sometimes. Like that's just the way the card works, the way the game works. But it's when you have to sort of deal with that sort of inherently as part of the game, and then you have these other just high roll moments that you lose to, high roll moment after high roll moment, and that just is like, you should balance that. You know, there should be as few of those as possible. You know, whether it's the judge, whether it's the VIP, whether it's the opener, and so on and so forth. It just feels like so many of Pokemon's just core issues are just systemic, I think, you know, just to complain about not having a mulligan rule and things like that, that it's just so strange that, you know, as a game, when we deck build, our main sort of concern is consistency. You know, what are all these top decks, Jason and Tord, what are they known for? Well, it's just playing four ofs, things like that. And then you have to build your decks and so purposefully just to play games, and that there's still just so much variance on top of that. It's just like, it's just such a strange space compared to other card games for me.
Yeah, I agree in some ways. I think that the other thing for me, particularly about cards like VIP Pass that feel substantially different than like N or even dare I say Reset Stamp, is both of those cards were sort of like more late game high rolling cards where, you know, you had some level of ability to like try to play your outs and maximize your odds of drawing them by like doing stuff like thinning your deck, getting rid of stuff you don't need so that you have the highest chance of drawing well off those. And that feels a little bit better to me than just the raw, oh, did I happen to draw?
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. One that we haven't brought out here. Cause yeah, that's absolutely right. And like, yeah, because with N or something, like sure, that's going to beat you, but you have the entire game to sort of play that game, you know, do that dance. Whereas with VIP Pass, you've got the first turn and that's it. And, you know, and then they're just immediately dead cards, and that's, there's nothing you can do beyond that other than just being, you know, fruitful, economical in how you get rid of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a really good point.
And I think we kind of like danced around this, but to be explicit, like one of the other issues with the VIP is like you're getting like doubly rewarded for drawing it on the first turn because you get to play it and you get the basics, but it's also out of your deck. And like, if you don't play any VIPs turn one, your odds of just judging into like double VIP pass is so much higher.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to say when you said, you know, it's twice as good as like versus no, it's more than that because you're thinning your deck also at the same time. So like, that's always, you know, a concern in Pokemon and probability and things like that. But yeah, it's just so good. It just feels like, it just stinks that we have to play this game. Why can't every deck just have the thing that, you know, lets them play, you know?
You make a good point though, and one I hadn't really thought about, that like the decks that get that seem like they're doing the best are decks that also get value out of VIP later. Like I was thinking earlier today about the magic of Night March back in the day. And like every time you played a Battle Compressor, not only were you like powering your offense, you were thinning your deck. Like the synergy of decks that like get value from the discard and from thinning their deck, like those are historically like the best decks in the game, you know?
Yeah, I think Battle Compressor is probably the closest feeling that I've ever had to VIP Pass before.
Me too.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Especially with Versus Seeker.
Yeah,
and everyone knew if you open Battle Compressor, you were like winning that game. Here we go.
Yeah. The difference is Battle Compressor was also just very good every other turn of the game too. Mm-hmm. And that's a big difference. So I think Battle Compressor was we could debate whether we think it was like too good or not, but just because of that, it's healthier for the game than VIP Pass.
I will get ahead of the comment. Britt was the guy who was saying they should errata Compressor to two cards before anybody else was saying that. He was on the train.
The article was just like, it's very similar points in that, like, at least here it's like not bi-directional or what have you. It's at least, it's just the one player, but just like having those games against Night March where it's just like, did they see four VIP on the, or four Battle Compressor on the first turn? Like, pick up your cards. I can't win anymore.
Yeah.
Like if some of their start, you know, your entire game plan is just dependent on how fast they drew those cards. And like, that's, again, doesn't feel good. Like there's no agency. There's no play.
And then the logical, like, you know, ultimate response to a Night March was like Vileplume Vespiquen, where like at the end of the first turn, everyone knew who was going to win, you know?
Yeah. And absolutely. And I think one other part that's a little bit interesting, and it's, I agree with Britt, a lot of the problems are kind of systemic to the core of the game. And the fact that this is also like a physical card game versus a digital one is it's really hard to, and it takes a lot for them to choose to errata a card. And it takes a lot for them to choose to ban a card, which means their only real solution for like dealing with oppressive decks, at least that they've ever really exercised, is releasing some sort of hard counter, you know, to Night March. First, that was Lysander's Trump card, which ended up being completely stupid. So then it was it was Oricorio. And for Mew, they're releasing a whole slew of different cards to try and reduce its power level.
There's Karen failed to stop Nightmare.
I felt like Oricorio was actually a pretty good one, but that's
off topic. Like some of they don't know how to make counter. They don't know how to design counters very well. Like, and this is something I had a good sort of conversation with, or at least hopefully it was like a nice little like learning opportunity with my Mirrodin opponent, who beat me real bad with his cleansing gloves, just punch and running on my poor little comfies over and over again. But anyways, he was very apologetic about it. He's like, I hope next time when we play, you know, it'll be a better matchup. And I told him like multiple times, like, you don't have to have, there's nothing for you to apologize for, but let's think about it for a second. Why does Pokemon design the game in this way? Like, why are the counters, you know, such that we don't get to play? Why can't it be like, I don't know, like thinking of something like Control Warrior versus Priest and like early Hearthstone or something. Like, you really couldn't win as the Priest player, but like you still got to play. There were still lines that could happen, and you know, you still got to have like a full game. It's just like all of the counters are so like, they're always too strong because they try, but they can't find the middle option. You know, that Nidalee didn't work, so here's Drapion, and Drapion is too good, you know, so on and so forth, that it's, you know, it creates these other problems where you know Gardevoir is threatened because Drapion is too good and things like that. And Drapion should just like, it should take a dark energy and it should reduce the dark color, you know, or something like that. There's no reason why it should also be triple or quadruple colorless and things like that. But I think that's their problem, is that they consistently miss on the soft counters and they just have to do these like cartoonish hard counters that just like are so bad for the game. I think trying to think of other things, like Arceus Spiritomb is like a decent a comparison to Klefki, and like there were games where, you know, you would open Spiritomb and just not be able to do anything, but like not to the degree that like Klefki can just stop a Lost Zone deck. But I just feel like there could be better ways than how they do it. I'm not sure, but you know, there's so many spaces within in the design space that I just feel like they don't explore, and like there's just so much you could do with more with the Lost Zone and things like that, or all these custom cards here and there will occasionally play on concepts I think that they should, you know, look into. But instead it's just like, you know, Terrestrialize is just Bench Barrier, which, you know, it's just very underwhelming, and just stuff like that over and over again. It's just more and more they know what they're doing, and it's the collectors that are making the money, so they're just more collecting goes on in the sets now than, you know, archetype design.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how other card games do it, but I play a good and have played a good amount of digital card games, and I mean it's very easy for them to, rather than releasing a hard counter for a deck, just actually nerf the archetype itself and adjust solely its power level and not kind of increase the power level of everything else against it, which I think is much healthier and of course is near impossible to do in a physical card game, which is unfortunate, but that's part of the game. So
yeah, obviously just like philosophy differences. I think obviously a very separate conversation, but I think the sort, yes, of like you know, the nuance of how you do both in a digital card game is very interesting. And you know, at least philosophically speaking, I'm sure that, you know, Hearthstone versus Runeterra, I'm sure they have very different sort of philosophies and suppositions how they go about both. And at the end of the day, it's just sort of about answering like questions, you know, you got to answer like, well, what is fun? You know, what are we after? What experience are we doing? And things like that. Are we chess or are we something else? And, you know, you go from there. But yeah, I mean, I think digital card games just sort of are always going to be in that unique space because they can solve on the fly.
All right, guys, I got to wrap us up because we're headed towards the end. I have two things that I wanted to talk about before we put a lid on it. One is I feel like when I watch the Twitter, people are talking about playing more rare candies as a way to speed up Gardevoir decks. And I wanted to get a quick round the horn on, like, will we see Gardevoir with Mewtwo predominantly in Portland? Will we see rare candy counts creep up in Portland? Like, what kind of Gardevoir decks are going to be the Gardevoir decks that do well?
Not Mewtwo. I don't think Mewtwo is very good. I think the biggest benefit of playing extra rare candy is for the Lost Box matchup, actually, because you can just kind of rush a Guard EX and they kind of have trouble dealing with that. So I could see running three, four seems like a lot to me, but I could see running three candies for that reason, for sure.
I agree, and I wouldn't go four. I don't know. I'm, you know, not as versed as probably either Mikey or Caden on Gardevoir. So, but I feel strongly about the heavier rare candy. I do think it seems very good, and like you balance it's nuanced, I guess, because obviously you lose consistency, you lose thinning, like opting going around Corellia. And so, like, you don't want to do it a lot, but I think playing more of them just for the one, you know, like Mikey says, the one Gardevoir EX. And as someone who's played against a handful of Guardies on Lost Box, it's really hard to deal with. If they get it fast, I feel like you know, and they just pressure you with Cresselia and things like that. It's really tough. And I think yes, for sure. I think that maybe three candies will see more play, more than the Tord list and the Mewtwo. People keep playing Mewtwo, I guess, but yeah, I don't think there's any reason to play it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how much I can say that hasn't been said already. I really agree with it. I think Mewtwo, the V-Union version, is suboptimal. It's going to see some play. I don't think it's as good. I think the majority of players will run something close to Tord's version and will have the two rare candies. However, I do think that as this meta progresses, there's a good chance we start to see, as Britt and Mike said, we'll start to see Guardies start to add three, maybe even four rare candy just to try to help out with the Lost Box matchup. So, yeah.
All right, guys, last question. I thought we should do a quick would you rather, because I feel like we've been depriving the people, and the people definitely want it. Here's your choices for today, guys. For the next year, you either have to watch 2 hours of Big Bang Theory every day or record two podcasts every week.
Oh, that's just too easy. I'm happy that you listen to me and we have a non-crude one here, but like I'm a, you know, egotistical, narcissistic person with a lot of interests. You know, I'll give me an opportunity just to talk and be vainglorious, and I'm on board. You know, DM me if you want to start another podcast, and I'll just make this a reality.
I would say the same thing, but maybe not exactly for the same reason. I just don't think I can. I don't think I could survive watching 2 hours of Big Bang Theory every day. Maybe if you picked a different show, I might say that one. Definitely not Big Bang Theory, though.
Big Bang Theory is like, I don't know. It's like, what analogy do I want to use here? It's like, you know how, you know, in math you have, differing degrees of infinity. You know, we can't, you know, I understand the concept of infinity, but it's not something I can really sort of like conceptualize or something like that. And here it's like, you know, I don't know anyone on the planet who watches this show, but I know the data says that, you know, like millions and millions of people watch it each and every day. And it's just, it's a fact that I just like, I understand it in concept, but I cannot fathom it beyond that.
That's really funny.
Yeah. I think for me, I think I would I would agree. Absolutely go with two podcasts a week, especially if they're Pokemon related. I gotta say, I enjoy doing these podcasts with you all, and I would love to do a second podcast, to be honest.
I should clarify. I don't know if I could do a second Pokemon one. Mostly just, I mean, I could, but I don't think I wouldn't be bringing anything to the table at that point. I wouldn't have anything new to offer, but I have lots of other interests and things like that.
That's what I'm talking about. For me, I'm like, am I really the only person that experiences stress when I think about like what content are we going to have every week? Like, man, just passively watching a show.
Most podcasts aren't prepared or anything. It's just dudes talking. They don't have agendas. They just show up and cover events.
See, Britt, I recognize one of the differences between you and me is I've got the home gym working. So I already know, like, I'm pretty much dialed in for 45 minutes to an hour of like super bad television every day. So it's a little more than I've scheduled, but I'm already scheduled up for bad television pretty much every day. So I think, I don't know. Like, Big Bang Theory is the worst. And I think that was part of the challenge here, but like the stress of producing a second podcast every week and trying to coordinate schedules for so
you
two
do,
days
you
a
do
week,
it so well though. I don't think most people are sort of as intentional in it, and there wouldn't be that stress. They just show up.
If you picked like Parks and Rec or like Ted Lasso, I'd probably pick those.
Absolutely, 100% agree.
You know what? If I thought they were gonna have 2 hours of new content for me every day for a year, like that'd be an easy sell. I'd be like, oh my god. but what if I told you that that it was gonna like take a Game of Thrones-ish turn, and by like 6 months in, you'd be like, these are the worst episodes ever. Oh my god, Parks and Rec is a disaster. it'd be tough. All right, guys, good stuff. Good luck to the Sixers tonight. Any comments on Golden State Warriors chances, Caden?
I mean, we're gonna stomp the Lakers. I look forward to that. And yeah, go Warriors.
I'm looking forward to the Sixers making the finals and losing to complete the second place Philly sweep of the whole year.
Obviously we're going into game one without Embiid. I feel like right now I would take that. It's tough to hear though. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah.